When a couple walks down the aisle, do they really know who they are marrying? A California beauty discovers her sugar daddy isn't really that sweet.
He wasn't looking for a companion or a loving wife. He was looking for a sex slave.
Put your head down!
A young frontier mom chops up more than wood.
Charlie's brothers, they found greasy ashes, and then they started finding his body parts.
And a Sydney woman gets the last word in her volatile marriage.
It was a stupid argument, and one split-second decision led to this terrible outcome.
When these deadly women tie the knot, their love soon turns to hate. They become brides of blood. Prenuptial agreements are common.
I think her life drastically changed due to a marital contract.
Put your head down!
But sometimes the hidden clauses.
Bob got more and more sexually demanding and sadistic.
Can be hard to live with. Los Angeles. A mecca for countless beauties hoping to make it on the big screen. In her 20s, Andrea Clare was one of the hopefuls.
She had been a bit player in a lot of TV shows and movies. She had some beautiful photographs of herself, facial, bathing suits, different costumes. She was in plays. She listed movies.
But the odd role as an extra doesn't pay the bills.
You like this tie?
I love it.
I just got this tie. You can have it if you want.
Andrea finds another way to cash in on her good looks.
She really couldn't make it as an actress, so she ended up working as a call girl to make money.
By 1980, 39-year-old Andrea is a high-priced hooker only the rich can afford. Like wealthy retiree, 69-year-old Bob Sand.
Robert Sands had been a lumberman in the Northeast and had made a fortune there. He retired to Los Angeles. He also had a long-standing history with prostitutes.
But Bob's married, and his wife of over 30 years knows all his dirty secrets.
His wife was divorcing him because he had an $800 a week prostitute habit.
What's going on? What's this? I'm sick to death of this waste of money!
And she was just not comfortable with that, needless to say.
I want a divorce.
Clarence!
After losing his wife, Robert consoles himself with a live-in hooker.
So that's how Andrea came into Bob Sands' life.
Even a chronic leg injury that confines him to a wheelchair doesn't stop Robert's wicked ways. Has Andrea on tap and can't get enough. But a full-time call girl is costly. The shrewd businessman takes advice from his accountant.
You are so much fun.
Got to the point where it was so expensive that his accountant recommended that he stop spending money on her each month and marry her to save money.
It's a proposition that Andrea jumps at. She is approaching the big 4-0 and knows her days of living off her looks are numbered.
Bob Sands was 30 years Andrea's senior. They were introduced by Andrea's madam. This is not a good recipe for a happy marriage.
I like you.
It's Bob's second marriage, but the fifth time for Andrea.
She did have a power over men. She had a way about her. She was real sensual, and she would, for lack of a better term, suck you in.
She used her charm, her beautiful body and face, to get the attention of men and to get them to marry her.
Early in 1981, the newlyweds move to Palm Springs, to a desert playground for the wealthy.
They lived in a big, gorgeous home in a very wealthy area in Rancho Mirage.
Oh, I love it.
Rancho Mirage is where a lot of CEOs and political figures and actresses and actors retire. It's known as the playground of the presidents.
I love you too.
I love you so much.
I'm
so glad.
Bob San was a very wealthy older man who was in a wheelchair. Perhaps Andrea thought this was her last chance at wealth. And the guy had one foot in the grave. What could be better?
But Andrea's new pampered life comes with strings attached.
I think her life drastically changed due to a marital contract that we found. She agreed to perform sexual services for him. There was a whole list of them, some of them somewhat perverted. And he would follow around and photograph her doing everything.
Andrea has a wedding ring, but is still being treated like a prostitute who must be available 24/7.
He put a stop to her social life. He wouldn't even take her out for dinner or let her play tennis outside. He wanted her all to himself.
According to Andrea, Bob got more and more sexually demanding. And his sex that he wanted was more and more sadistic.
She hated it, and she hated him.
Might have been the straw that broke the camel's back.
Put your head down!
Bob San wasn't looking for a companion or a loving wife. Bob San was looking for a sex slave, and he got it. But the slave broke away.
Rancho Mirage, Palm Springs, 1981. High-class prostitute, 39-year-old Andrea Sand, marries her rich client, 69-year-old Robert. But moving up in the world isn't what she expects.
She thought it would be a life of luxury, and instead it was a life of somewhat sexual slavery, and she just couldn't stand it anymore. Even though Mr. Sand was in a wheelchair, I think he was a very demanding person, and he exercised control over primarily financially.
Andrea is not a woman to be trifled with. She stands up to Bob.
Bob told friends and his lawyer that he was getting sick of Andrea's temper, that she could be abusive.
But he was also compelled to stay with her because she had the most incredible body he'd ever seen, and the sex was wonderful.
Come on, baby.
May 14th, 1981. Bob is in bed, waiting for his new bride to perform her wifely duties. Andrea is about to give Bob a performance to die for.
That's when she attacked him with a knife.
It was an out-of-control frenzy, just stabbing over and over and over and over again. He was stabbed 27 times, and importantly, he was stabbed in the heart and severed the aorta.
Andrea was smaller than Bob, but she didn't need to stab him 27 times to kill him. That was a frenzied, rageful attack.
Struck with a board and it, split his ear.
He was hit so hard in the head that it caused a skull fracture.
Andrea's past acting experience is now put to use.
Officer, the place is already being searched. Why aren't you out there searching for the murderers that murdered my husband?
She tells police a well-rehearsed story.
She said she heard her husband yelling out, and as she went down the hallway to his bedroom, some stranger in the dark bumped into her, pushed her out of the way, and ran out of the condominium. She went in there to find Robert on the ground.
You're wasting time. They need
two men don't come in a house. Kill the alpha male in the house. Take nothing and leave the wife unharmed. That is pure fantasy.
Police doubt her story, but don't have enough evidence to arrest her. While the investigation continues, there is a bizarre twist.
Oh my God, please help me!
Weeks after the murder, Andrea claims the killers return and rape her.
We never found any evidence of the assault. We couldn't find any physical evidence on her.
Judge Hawkins, the DA assigned to the case, says it was the first of many assault claims.
She continued to tell us that the intruders returned and either sexually assaulted her or kidnapped her and sexually assaulted her repeatedly. There were so many incidents.
On July 23rd, 1981, police answer yet another distress call, but are not prepared for what they find.
Police came to her home. She was on the kitchen floor, bound hand and foot, and she had a knife sticking out of her buttocks.
I've been on the bench for 15 years, and I haven't seen any cases as bizarre as this one.
Oh my God, they raped me, all three of them.
She made herself the center of the story repeatedly. And the police knew what that meant. She was the killer.
The same ones that they murdered my husband, too.
Police need more evidence. Meanwhile, Andrea finds someone who does believe her, 56-year-old widower Joe Mims. He wants to become husband number six.
He took it upon himself to try to protect her from the return of the intruders who kept kidnapping and assaulting her.
Judge Hawkins tried to talk him out of the wedding.
He became irate and suggested that I spend my time trying to find the intruders that keep returning and assaulting her, the real murderers, and stop harassing her.
10 months after she buries husband number five, and with Robert's murder still open, Andrea marries for the sixth time. On Halloween 1982, Andrea takes her new husband, Joe, out on a late-night picnic, a reward for his love and protection.
So Joe thinks, well, this is the best thing going.
Just relax, relax.
Suddenly, he feels a crack on the back of his head. And there's Andrea with a hammer in her head, beating him in the head. And he wrestled the hammer away from her.
At this point, Andrea was really out of control. She wasn't thinking clearly, and finally her lies caught up with her.
It's the break police have been waiting for.
The fact that she tried to kill him was a real game changer. It was the evidence that we needed to really go forward on the case.
Andrea accepts a plea bargain for assaulting Joe Mims with a deadly weapon and receives 4 years. She stands trial for the first-degree murder of Robert Sand and is found guilty.
Women that stab men 27 times are not held in high regard by jurors. Jurors are afraid of them. They don't want them walking around.
I do understand she suffered at the hands of men, why she had her relationship problems that she did, but I don't think that was ever an excuse to forgive her or forget what she did to Robert Sand.
In May 1984, Andrea Sand is sentenced to 26 years to life in prison. In court, she wants the last word.
When the judge read the verdict to her, she slammed down a box of tissues on the thing and said, "I killed him because he called me a whore."
Throughout Andrea's life, Crying Wolf worked for her. It got the attention of men. This time, it didn't work. It got her in prison.
When life is full of disappointment.
Whether he was abusive, she was abusive, nobody knows anything.
And hardship.
Really, everything you got, you had to work so hard for it.
The most unlikely women can snap.
Was it self-defense? Was it jealous rage? Was it cold-blooded murder?
Sweet 16 and never been kissed doesn't apply to Frankie Stewart. By that tender age, Frankie becomes a bride. In 1829, she marries 17-year-old Charlie Silver.
She supposedly was beautiful, and she had charm. A likable person. I don't think that she ever had a bad reputation, to my knowledge. She was really, really smart.
In these days, teenage marriages are more an expectation than a scandal.
Conditions at the time were such that in most families, people tended to marry young if they could.
Frankie and Charlie are mountain folk, raised in the rugged wilderness around Morganton, North Carolina, a tough, unforgiving environment. But nothing quite prepared them for married life in a one-room cabin in the frontier wilderness.
The total isolation up here in the mountains and living in a one-room cabin, keep in mind, no plumbing, no nothing. And also to try to scrape a living out of these hills, really everything you got, you had to work so hard for it.
Frankie is bred to cope with hard work, even when she gets pregnant, only months after marrying.
She was a person of early America. She could do anything that a man could do just about on the farm.
The neighbors all said how industrious she was, how hard she worked.
Her new husband doesn't share his wife's sense of duty. He is more of a good time guy.
Also, there's a lot of evidence of how Charlie loved to drink.
He was real popular in the area. They said that he was popular with the young ladies.
Frankie was stuck out in the mountains with a husband that drank too much and chased women.
Tell my dad to be home soon. So, Charlie, where are you?
The harsh conditions and the two-timing Charlie are straining the relationship. Frankie is left to fend for herself and their baby daughter, Nancy.
I think Frankie and Charlie had cabin fever. He was sick and tired of living in that tiny little space, and they had a new baby, and for a strapping young man, he just couldn't stand it, and he was drunk and disorderly.
Frankie and Charlie were very young and immature when they got married and became parents.
The pressure is too much for the teen. Frankie turns to her father, Isaiah.
A woman's opportunities were limited in those days, and so she was really at the mercy of two different families, her own family and her husband's.
When we first got married, we were so happy.
Dad thinks he has the answer. Convince his drunken son-in-law to sell his property so the family can use the proceeds to head out west. A fresh start.
They wanted Charlie to sell his part of the property and convert it to goods that they could all go west on. But Charles didn't have any mind at all to go west. He didn't want to go.
Frankie's hopes of a new life are dashed.
Charlie, come on.
until 3 days before Christmas in 1831, when her husband doesn't return from a hunting trip. Charlie's descendant, Bobby McMillan, has heard the story since he was a little boy.
His daddy was really alarmed, and he put out the word and got some of his boys together, and they started asking around for anybody that had seen Charlie. Nobody had.
And nobody will, not as they remember him. In 1831, in the rugged mountains near Morganton, North Carolina, the honeymoon period is over for teen wife and mom, Frankie Silver. 2 years into her marriage, she resents being home with her young daughter while 19-year-old Charlie drinks and plays around.
Charlie was a good time, good old boy. And of course, there also is a lot of evidence of how Charlie loved to drink, too.
I just don't know what to do anymore.
Charlie has one thing Frankie wants, the deeds to their property. Frankie and her dad urge him to sell his land and move west. But Charlie won't go.
What am I supposed to do?
Her father kept on to her to pressure Charlie into moving, and she might have pressured him into getting really mad.
December 22nd, Charlie returns from a hunting trip.
Where have you been?
To an angry wife.
There was an argument.
No one's sure exactly what happens that night.
Hey, back you, lazy, nothing's been done. Just shut up.
But one theory suggests both of them snap. Charlie is under pressure to sell and please his wife's family.
Some people say that he went to get his gun and she got the axe and hit him first.
What about me? Don't speak to me like that, woman.
Whether he was abusive, she was abusive, nobody knows anything. All they know is for certain is she killed him.
There's no dispute that Frankie killed Charlie with an axe. What's up for grabs is why it happened. Was it self-defense? Was it jealous rage? Was it cold-blooded murder?
What happens next has been debated in the mountains of North Carolina for almost 200 years.
She cut his head off with an axe and then burned him in the fireplace. That was the horror of it.
Why she would have killed him, what the situation was that would cause somebody to hate another person enough to kill him.
According to one version, what body parts Frankie can't burn, she scatters around the wilderness. But her gruesome game of hide and seek doesn't work.
Charlie's brothers, they found greasy ashes in the fireplace. There were bone chips and plenty of evidence. And then they started finding his body parts around.
They found his head in an old hollow stump.
Lights, that's the lungs and the guts, you know, the parts that don't burn, was put in a sack.
Frankie is arrested for murder. The evidence seems as compelling as it is frightening.
If Frankie had just hit her husband once, killed him, it would have been vastly different. She chopped her husband up after decapitating him. People are afraid of women that do that.
At trial, Frankie has nothing to say. She offers no defense for her actions. Justice is swift in the 1900s. After 3 days, she's found guilty of murder and sentenced to death.
Mom, I love you.
Have you anything to say?
On the gallows, Frankie is given one last chance to explain.
They asked her if she had anything to say, and she told them that she did. And just as she went to open her mouth,
"Die with it in you, Frankie, die with it in you."
Her father hollered out, "Die with it in you." And she wouldn't say anything.
Her father said to her, "Frankie, take this with you," implying something much more sinister was behind Charlie's death than simply Frankie striking out at an abusive husband. Her dad knew what it was.
Many believe the true criminal was Frankie's father, Isaiah. Even the victim's own descendants.
My grandmother's uncle, he told me that her daddy was there to eat supper with him. And Charlie, he laid down on a sheepskin rug in front of the fireplace and played with the baby a little while, and they both fell off to sleep. And her daddy said, "Now's your chance, Frankie, now's your time."
According to folklore, it's Isaiah who goads Frankie to murder.
Finally, she just said, "I can't do it." Said, "I can't kill him." And her daddy said, "If you don't kill him," said, "I'll kill you.
If you don't kill him, I'll kill you."
She felt threatened enough that she'd give him one blow to the head.
Do it.
Her daddy took the axe and struck him a blow to the neck so hard that his head bounced against the rafters.
Many believe Frankie had nothing to do with cutting up her husband.
He done the dirty work, that he chopped him all to pieces.
But on the gallows, Frankie maintains her silence.
Die with it in you, Frankie.
The victim of two men who should have protected her. In July 1833, Frankie Silver faces the hangman.
Grandpa, I love you.
Legend has it, she leaves this world with a song.
My son has gone, my days are past.
There's something that she had wrote while she was in jail. She had wrote this Frankie's poem.
Frankie's poem becomes a nursery rhyme in the area, passed down generation to generation.
My sun goes down, my days are past, and I must leave this world at last.
Although there is still debate over who dismembered her husband, time has healed the wounds. Now there is great sympathy for Frankie, who many believe gave up her life to protect her father.
To this day, there have always been people at the time and throughout history who felt she was unfairly dealt with because it was a woman fighting back at a time when women had no rights, women could not do that.
The truth of the matter is, if it was self-defense, there was no way Frankie was not going to be held accountable for it. This was a misogynist mountain society. Frankie didn't stand a chance.
In your head.
When a couple can't cope with life together.
If ever there was a hot and cold relationship, this was it.
And they can't survive apart.
I don't know how this situation could be any worse than these two people made it.
Something has to give.
It was the spur of the moment. It was a terrible, stupid, drunken mistake.
Many young women dream of meeting a Mr. Right who is charming and wealthy. In the year 2000, Sydney, Australia, 50-year-old Chaim Kimmel has it in spades.
He was a bit of a bon vivant, good living, the wealthiest part of Sydney. He enjoyed a wonderful lifestyle.
A successful entrepreneur and antiques dealer, Chaim savors the fruits of his success, including pretty women. Tonight, one in particular catches his eye. 25-year-old Danielle Stewart.
Danielle was a very attractive, shortish, blonde, loved a drink. He was an older man, but a really good style of a bloke.
They met on the dance floor and hit it off immediately.
So I'm a part-time accountant.
You are? Mm-hmm. That's a serendipity.
Oh, really?
And you're a bookkeeper.
Oh. Chaim moves in quickly, offering Danielle a job.
Danielle was doing some bookkeeping work in Chaim's antique furniture business.
Look at that.
Came in.
It has arrived.
Oh, they're so pretty.
A month I had to wait for these ones.
He made some advances which weren't initially reciprocated.
They look beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
Almost as beautiful as you are.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for being here. I really like your earrings.
But then after time, they became intimate, and it was on.
You asked me on a date.
Okay.
Sure.
Neil was certainly a prize catch. I think that I would have been very happy with himself for snagging a beauty like her.
As the passion ignites, Chaim discovers his pretty conquest is as volatile as she is beautiful.
When Danielle was only 11, she suffered a terrible loss. Her mother died. After that, she became the victim of sexual abuse by three different men. By the time Danielle was a young woman, she was very disturbed.
What are you doing?
I'm just...
I like the wine, thank you.
Danielle has an inability to cope with the ups and downs of life.
Why are you doing that?
She has a borderline personality disorder.
Can you stop trying to control me all the time?
It's in your head.
No, it's not. You are controlling me, and that's why I drink, because you control me.
People, mostly women, with borderline personality disorder are always living on the edge. They love drama.
You're drunk already.
And that's fine. I'll take my wine and go.
If ever there was a hot and cold relationship, this was it. One minute they're yelling and screaming at each other, and then they'd be lovey-dovey and back within each other's arms.
Life on the edge is washed down with two bottles of fine wine every day.
What's that? What are you doing?
Going out to have some fun.
It was very alcohol-fueled, very hedonistic.
Going out like that?
Yeah, going out like this.
No, not going anywhere.
There was a lot of violent arguments.
They'd been in a relationship for 4 years and were married, but after only 1 year later, they separated.
Go out?
Yes, I do want to go out. But I want you to stop controlling me.
Being abandoned is a fear of Danielle's that has its roots in her unstable and grief-stricken childhood.
She went through life with a paranoia that people were going to leave her, and she became very, very possessive of her partner, and that, fueled by alcohol, was the basis of the majority of their problems.
The couple that find it impossible to live together soon discover they can't live apart.
actually went out with somebody else. He was seeing other people, but they could not stop speaking. They remained extremely close.
Should I tell you now?
Until something happens that brings the tortured soulmates to a crossroad. Danielle gets pregnant by her new lover.
And the new fellow wants to settle down and start raising a family, which incidentally was Danielle's greatest dream, was to have a family. But she is still drawn to Haim uncontrollably.
Danielle wants to leave her lover and return to her husband.
I want to come home.
It's not that simple.
I think Danielle was trying to recreate the normal, happy family she had before her mother passed away. But nothing she did worked.
I miss you too. But this changes things, doesn't it?
Haim decides she can return home at a price.
I don't want the child of another man.
Please.
He told her that either she has a termination or there's no hope of them ever getting back together.
Please take me back.
All right.
Danielle agrees, and the couple try again.
This was a dreadful decision. Factor in alcohol, and it's going to be bad.
In Sydney, Australia, 2006. 30-year-old Danielle Stewart and 55-year-old Haim Kimmel are attempting to fix their broken marriage. It's not going well.
It was short-lived. As soon as they were back together, it was business as usual.
I don't know how this situation could be any worse than these two people made it. Extreme alcohol abuse, clinical depression from a recent abortion, and living with someone you hate. This could not have had a happy ending.
The old problems just resurfaced. They kept on living the same way. They kept on with the dinner parties and living the good life.
So who wants another drink?
Absolutely.
Why not?
Yeah. All right, let's do it.
And with this came Danielle's terrible response to alcohol excess.
On August 23rd, 2006, after dinner with friends, it comes to a head.
Sir, here's to a great night.
It was noted by others there that Danielle seemed a little drunker than usual.
What?
Just take it easy.
Things got a little bit more testy, and Danielle left and decided to walk home.
Just drink slowly. I'm just saying, slow it down.
But the night air doesn't cool down Danielle. When Haim returns home, the argument boils over.
Had something to do with him telling to turn the music off.
I like the music loud.
Neighbors are asleep.
But had something to do with him having changed the password on the computer.
You changed the password! You're trying to control me!
I changed the password because you're getting to my emails and I lose
it. It was apparently an ongoing issue in their relationship. He would change the password so that she couldn't get into his business emails.
Trying to control me again. Start!
Danielle does not back down.
Get out of my house!
Mike turns physical. She starts to physically attack him.
Get out of your house!
It escalated, and then she, in the heat of the moment, picked up an old antique knife, or decorative knife. Picked it up and stuck it in Haim twice. Five times the alcohol limit. She was incoherent, and it was a stupid, pointless, uncontrolled lover's argument. And one split-second decision led to this terrible outcome.
She was looking for a fight that night. And she was impulsive, she was depressed, she was upset. She had very poor impulse control. She might not have intended to kill, but she had to know what she was doing when she was picking up that knife.
Chaim struggles to the front door. His son desperately tries to help him.
So the son runs out of his room. He finds his father clutching his stomach where he's been stabbed twice, covered in blood, barely able to speak.
Chaim's son considers retaliation.
He picks up a golf club and thinks for a moment that he might avenge his father. It's actually Chaim himself who tells him, don't do it, lying there, sort of holding himself together. So the son puts the golf club down and nurses his father while he lies there dying.
Chaim later succumbs to his injuries in the hospital.
I don't know that Danielle actually planned that night, but the only way he'd be alive today is if he had left the house and not returned.
Anyone who would have been in a relationship with Danielle Stewart would have been in a relationship that was doomed from the start. Combination of psychological problems fueled by excesses of alcohol was always going to end in disaster.
Danielle wept throughout much of the trial. It was very clear that she completely regretted what she'd done and that she wanted him back, and she felt quite horrible.
Danielle Stewart is found guilty of manslaughter. Sentenced to 6 years and 4 months in prison. Danielle is released in 2011.
I believe it was fair, although I spent every day with Chaim's family and I really, really feel for their loss, and nothing can ever make up for that.
Borderline personality disorder, a bad relationship, lots of alcohol, and clinical depression don't mix well. Danielle proved that.
When these marriages failed, the women didn't waste time on a divorce. Andrea Sand wanted her husband's wealth, but not her husband. Frankie Silver put her farming skills to lethal use. And Danielle Stewart's internal rage exploded in manslaughter. These deadly women stole the lives of the men they vowed to cherish. They were brides of blood.